This is Inside Douglas County on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN. It's our daily in-depth look at people and issues that are shaping the local area. Inside Douglas County is presented by Concrete Builder Supply. Now, Inside Douglas County on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
Friday afternoon, and State Representative Virgil Osborne in from Salem talking about what's going on in the Oregon State Legislature. Midway Point, sounds like it's been a busy week up there.
Yeah, hey, Kyle, thanks for having me. It's been extremely busy, and a lot of stuff going through the House right now. Of course, we were up against our chamber deadline, which came and went. So, yeah, things, if they're gonna happen, they would have had to have happened.
Now, explain, when you said chamber deadline, what does that mean?
So there is a deadline in the chamber for on the House side, and then, of course, there's a deadline on the Senate side, too, that a bill has to have been heard and worked. And, for instance, in our Committee for Climate, Energy, and Environment this week, we still had a number of bills that had not been worked, which is called a work session, which means we vote, the committee votes them to go through or doesn't. And, I mean, I think we did like 28 bills out of committee in less than 2 hours.
Wow. Now, one of the things I wanted to ask about, because certainly got a lot of attention here, is the legislation regarding the Roseburg Urban Growth Boundary. Where's that at?
That has cleared committee, and it will be heading to the House floor. And it came out of housing committee. It came out unanimous. Everybody voted for it. And so now what will happen is it will probably next week go to the House floor for passage from the House floor. Then if it passes the House, it'll go to the Senate.
So at that point, you said it passed unanimously out of committee?
It did, yeah. There was lots of testimony heard on it. The work session was held for it before the deadline. And the testimony was primarily in proponents. I think in general, the concept is a good concept. I don't think everybody is in love with the concept where it's happening, but the idea of taking land that is completely unusable and trading it for land that is usable and giving the people that own the land the option of whether or not they want to be annexed is a great idea. They don't have to be. You can choose not to be annexed, and I don't think there's any intention of an annexation at the moment. But it will be in the urban growth boundary at some point if this bill passes.
So, if this does go through, if it gets signed, how soon does it go into effect?
Again, I'd have to go back and look at the bill. I think it had emergency clause. It would probably go into effect within 90 days.
So that would sounds like very dramatically speed up the process that the city has been working through for quite a while.
It would, and I mean, the process has been worked through. It was just appealed, and it will, there's some folks that say, well, it was appealed and it died. Well, it never died. What happens is these things go into a state of appeal with LUBA, and they never come out. They just keep going back and forth and back and forth, and thousands of dollars are spent. And then at some point down the road, 10, 20 years, for the city of Milwaukee, it took them 26 years to do a similar thing. And so after all the money spent, it's still going to happen. This just makes sense. It will speed the process up. Doesn't mean that the development is going to start tomorrow, but it gives people the ability, if they do choose to develop their property after the proper zone changes are done, they can do it.
And, of course, it's something that's been kicked around for quite a while. I mean, as long as I've been living here, really, the idea of taking that Charter Oaks area has been a point of discussion.
It has, and I don't think it's a secret. I think everybody knew at some point some of that land was going to be developed. And again, I think, the way it will be developed will be appropriate. And I think that it is going to add to our ability here frankly, we need housing. I mean, Roseburg and Douglas County is lacking housing. And that's not the only thing we need. I mean, we need to relax some of our land use zoning laws, and we need to start allowing folks in the outside of this area, kind of, in that part of suburbs of Oregon, or sorry, suburbs of Roseburg, where it would make sense to put housing, but they can't because the zoning is wrong. And it doesn't make sense to grow on the property, and doesn't make sense to have cows on the property because it doesn't fit either of those. But yet, the way our state zoning works, they can't do anything with it. So hopefully the state will start relaxing some of that stuff and allow for, we got to get the price of housing down. And this is how you do it. And the inventory's got to go up.
Well, one of the things that you often do is talk about bad bills of the week. What do you have for us?
Well, we did. There was a lot of bills yesterday. I think we did over 20 bills. I'm close to 30 bills through the House floor. There really wasn't anything that was terribly, terribly bad. There was one bill that we did pass off the House floor that was clearly and primarily a union-centered bill, and it really should have gone back to committee, but we couldn't seem to convince him to do that. There was another bill that passed the House floor, and I don't remember the exact number, 3865 possibly, that was a bill that eliminated against the law for solicitation calls for businesses after 7 o'clock in the evening, and there were several other restrictions that it created, punishable by, you know, the law, punishable by fines, which seemed like a really good bill. It came through Commerce and Consumer Protection. The problem with the bill was it's 7 o'clock is the deadline for a solicitation call at your house. But if there was a time at, say, 6:49 that you had a discussion with a company about, say, renting a piece of equipment from them, and you knew that you needed to get home before you could, you know, say, get your credit card, and that company called you back at 7:02, after 7 o'clock, 7:02, that company would technically be breaking the law. So, and it's punishable. So we went pretty hard trying to get them to send that bill back for more discussion, but we couldn't seem to get the majority party to lean into that. So it did pass. Beyond that, Kyle, we're about ready to go into the next few weeks of gun bills, and they are all just awful. There is nothing about the gun bills that is coming up that I can tell you is good for Oregon at all.
Well, and you've got, what, three different ones mainly, right?
Well, so, yeah, interestingly enough, so we have House Bill 3075 and 3076. 3075 is just 114. So 3075, now that 114 has been found okay constitutionally, 3075 pretty much dies, and or if things change, they may bring it back. 3076 had some other nasty gun stuff in it, but both of those bills went to Ways and Means. Now, I was told by the majority party, Ways and Means is where bills go to die, and they just usually don't get funded. But I was told by the majority party leader through our proxy, through our minority party leader, that those bills are going to stay alive and they are going to fund them. So the majority party in Oregon, the Democrats, have every intention of passing those bills and funding those bills and stopping you from being able to purchase the gun. I mean, just as simple as that. It's sad. But there are also, three or four other bills coming through the Senate right now that do more damage. There is a bill that prohibits gun dealers. Well, the 72-hour waiting period for guns is also Senate Bill 429. That's working its way through. There's Senate Bill 697, which some of this stuff is, I think, has been added into Senate Bill 243, but it's the age limit, not allowing you to own a gun unless, you know, or even in possess a gun if you're under 21. I mean, if that's not a direct constitutional violation, I don't know what is. You can go to war, you can be drafted, or you can join the military and go to war at 18, but you can't technically own a gun until you're 21. It's just crazy, pure crazy. Anyway, the list goes on. So yeah.
And what kind of pushback are the Democrats seeing from the Republicans about these gun bills?
Well, of course, you know, they hear from us every day, and we get a lot of folks that, well, frankly, the amount of opponents on these bills come from all over the state, and it's thousands of people don't want these bills to pass. But the Democrats don't want to listen to that. They don't seem to care. Honestly, I don't understand why they don't pay attention to that, but they don't. Of course, they hear from us, in not only in our marketing against it, but in testimony, and there's been a lot of good testimony. Alex Scarlatos, our newest rep, he's done a fantastic job of basically undoing all of their nonsense, but they're not changing their ways. Now, we're getting a lot of pressure to walk out. That comes with a whole host of other problems. Obviously, the biggest one, potentially losing 24 seats at one time, doesn't mean you're going to get 24 back, and likely we'd get 19, which puts us in not only the super minority, but you wouldn't be able to deny quorum if you did come back. There's a lot of problems with there's a lot of problems with that. So I don't know what's going to happen. I do know there are plans for all kinds of strategy right now. We're making them read bills and taking time, but we'll find out.
All right, we're going to take a break, come back with more. State Representative Virgil Osborne, the interview podcast after one at 541radio.com. 1246 at News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN. Inside Douglas County, 1248 News Radio, 93.9 FM, 1240 KQEN. State Senator David Brock Smith on Monday from Salem, but in studio, State Representative Virgil Osborne going over the weekend. The legislature, not just for the legislature, but for the Republican Party, quite a week as a chair. Jerry Cummings, who'd only been in his position for a few weeks, ended up resigning pretty suddenly following an investigation that came out from up north, tied in with Willamette Week and the Oregon Journalism Project. If I got the name right, I don't have my notes in front of me now. Pretty unusual to have somebody take over an organization and exit just weeks later. How did that happen?
Yeah, that's a good question, Kyle. That's unfortunate for the party that this did happen. I met Jerry a couple of weeks ago. He came to my office and we had probably a 20-minute conversation. And he also came into the Capitol while the Republican women were there as well. And I mean, Jerry seemed like he really had a good handle on the direction of the Republican Party and what needed to be done. And it seemed like he was kind of off to a good start. He was obviously voted into that position. I was comfortable, you know, that happened. Now, I don't get involved in the vetting process of things that have happened in the past, and unfortunately, in this particular instance, nobody did. But then on the other hand, Jerry didn't disclose any of it either, from what I understand, although I believe it was all public knowledge. My biggest concern really right now was the finances, because that is certainly public knowledge. The rest of it, he was never charged with any of those crimes, but I just don't know. I have no idea whether he really did what he did or if he didn't. I just don't know. It's speculation.
You know, it's interesting a lot, especially in the modern age when so much information is public or could be researched fairly quickly, that an organization wouldn't go through a process and internally vet people. I mean, if you go to be a volunteer for a nonprofit in Roseburg, you're going to get more vetting than apparently the state GOP did for its leader, and that seems a little odd.
Yeah, for sure. You know, I can only liken it to something I've been through, and, you know, being part of the Sheriff's Department Search and Rescue Team, they have a very robust vetting process, and I mean, it goes all the way into your personal life deeply, and things you may or may not have done count, all the way down to your credit score. I mean, there's some things. So, I suppose this was probably a hit piece that was done on purpose. Somebody probably thought, well, we're going to take him out and we're going to do this kind of thing. I mean, it happens. It really blindsided me. I had no idea it was coming. And when I saw it, I was like, oh man, that's a real setback. Now, on the bright side, Connie Welchel is a great person. I think she's more than capable of picking up the reins and running with it. And I think they will elect a new, if she doesn't want to stay in the position, they will elect a new chair at some point. And the party will move on. I mean, those things that he was accused of does not shape who we are.
And, of course, he was a former county resident as well a number of years back. Now, during the week, I think a couple days ago, really came out from the governor's office kind of pushing back on some of President Trump's initiatives, especially regarding DEI and some other things as well. And some people are wondering if that's going to put sort of Oregon in a position where the federal level may almost retaliate, if you want to use that word, and take a lot of money away from Oregon, which leaves you in the legislature wondering how to fund things.
Well, I would say stand back and watch, because I honestly think it's coming. And our governor is doubling down, not just our governor. I mean, if you have the time to tune in and listen to the remonstrances that happen at the end of each of the House floor sessions, I mean, you know, we've listened to this week alone, one of our Democrat colleagues got up and spoke about, you know, how Trump was killing the nation with tariffs and, you know, the stock market had crashed and this would be the doomsday. The world's coming to an end. Literally the next morning, the stock market had one of the biggest rebounds and the biggest gains it's had in over 20 years. So our governor's doing the same thing. I mean, they're playing their cards. They're saying and suggesting that we double down, we keep DEI at the head of everything. And, you know, that's fine. It will ruin the state. We will end up trying to find ways to fund projects that, you know, that they were counting on federal money to get, and they're not going to get it. And if this is what it takes, sadly, this may be the part that turns the corner in this state. I can only hope.
Now, it was the midway point for the session this week. What lies ahead? What kinds of things haven't been dealt with yet?
So we have literally seen no Senate bills yet come through our committees. And so now, since we've passed the first chamber deadline, and we're on to the second chamber stuff now, so what will happen now is all of our House bills have gone through committee. They've either had a work session, or they've all had hearings that are going to continue on, or had a work session. So now we start seeing Senate bills. So you'll see, and a lot of House bills and Senate bills are very similar. So what will end up happening is some of those bills will be consolidated. Also, a lot of the bills that had big fiscals on them have gone down to Ways and Means. So you'll start seeing some of those come out as well. And then we start talking about projects. And at the end of the session, the Christmas tree bill, which everybody loves, will have everybody's projects, their district projects in it. And the Ways and Means will decide which of those projects are going to get funded. And we'll find out. It's going to be interesting if there's any money left.
Well, and that seems like that's a big concern.
It is, because there's literally over, I don't know what the final number was, but I know it's somewhere in the neighborhood of $900 million worth of requests for state funds for all kinds of things, from rebuilding fairgrounds to art and cultural centers to infrastructure projects to, you know, you name it. And I remember that number, that $900 million, and know that our state, our ODOT, just misplaced $1 billion in the last biennium. They haven't really figured out exactly how that happened. So, you know, they count on federal funds. The state runs on federal funds on a lot of that stuff. So I just don't know how any of those projects are going to be met without raising taxes. And if you've looked at the transportation package, I think it's pretty clear where they're headed with taxes.
Yeah, pretty long list of taxes there.
It is the most crazy thing I've seen in my short 3 years of being in the House. I mean, I can't even imagine coming back to my district and telling everybody, by the way, we're going to raise gas tax 20%. We're going to raise your payroll tax 16.9%. Oh, and while we're at it, we're going to add 3% tire tax on all your tires. This is the definition of crazy. Our economy can't handle it. The folks that live, you know, there's a lot of folks that live paycheck to paycheck. And when I say we, the Democrat Party, because they are the controlling party of the state and have been for 30 years, this is a result of mismanagement. And the only way to answer mismanagement is to change the process of what you're doing and fix the process. It's broken. ODOT is broken. And they need to do some reforms. They need to cut some people, but we're not going to do that, evidently. They're going to try to push this agenda. So it will be a fight, and you're going to need all of us there to do that.
Do you see any, from the Democratic side, as you talk to folks, anybody that's more kind of a moderate or centrist Democrat that sometimes questions their own party but maybe doesn't want to say that too out loud?
Oh, yeah, for sure. And we had some discussion here a while back. Kevin Mannix, he's a Republican, but he's been in the House as a Democrat prior to being a Republican. He switched parties. But he brought up something that happened, I believe, in the 80s. And Kyle, you might remember this, but there was a group of six called the Six Pack. And they were primarily Democrats, but they realized that because of the numbers in the House and the Senate, the six of them literally could control the House, right, by the way they voted. Because no party had the majority enough to make things happen. And that concept would be pretty interesting right now, because I believe there are six Democrats that are, not only are they in swing districts, I think there's six Democrats, some of them are rural Democrats, and they're all, I mean, I've talked to most of them, and they're all pretty much of the same mindset. This is craziness. But none of them are willing to buck their caucus. So it would take a group of them to get together and get outside of their caucus to actually start voting with, you know, with what the Oregon citizens really want.
Before we wrap it up, I know that you've got a town hall event next week. Tell people about that.
We do. Myself and Alex Scarlatos, and he was our newest rep, and Senator Brock Smith and Court Boyce will all be at 6 o'clock on next Friday night at the Roseburg City Council Chamber. And we will be answering questions, session questions. We've got about an hour and a half scheduled. So we'll go through a process of giving everybody an update of where we're at, and then we're going to take questions for the majority. majority of that time from the citizens that that join us. So please plan on joining us and ask those questions. I mean, that's what we're here for.
All right, State Representative Virgil Osborne, thanks for coming in.
Thank you. Take care.
1258 News Radio, 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
You've been listening to Inside Douglas County on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN. A daily look at the people and issues that are shaping Douglas County. It's presented by Concrete Builder Supply. The show will be available as a podcast in just a few minutes at 541radio.com. So share it around and let others who weren't listening live know about today's show. Inside Douglas County is a public affairs presentation of Brook Communications. Stay connected with local news and information. News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.